Chapter 35. Church, Eddie, don't you know church begins at 2, and it's gone half after 1 already? Have you got nothing better to think on this good Sunday as poor old Thias beats, to be put into the ground, and him grounded ith dead o' the night, as it's enough to make one's back run cold, but you must be dizening yourself, as if there was a wedding instead of a funeral? Well, and, said Eddie, I can't be ready so soon as everybody else, when I've got Toddy's things to put on. And I'd ever such work, to make her stand still. Eddie was coming downstairs, and Mrs. Poyser, in her plain bonnet and shawl, was standing below. If ever a girl looked as if she had been made of roses, that girl was Eddie in her Sunday hat and frock. For her hat was trimmed with pink, and her frock had pink spots, sprinkled on a white ground. There was nothing but pink and white about her, except in her dark hair and eyes and her little buckled shoes. Mrs. Poyser was provoked at herself, for she could hardly keep from smiling, as any mortal is inclined to do at the sight of pretty round things. So she turned without speaking, and joined the group outside the house door, followed by Eddie, whose heart was fluttering so at the thought of someone she expected to see at church, that she hardly felt the ground she trod on. And now the little procession set off. Mr. Poyser was in his Sunday suit of drab, with a red and green waistcoat, and a green watch ribbon having a large cornelian seal attached, pendant like a plumb line from that promontory where his watch pocket was situated, a silk handkerchief of a yellow tone round his neck, and excellent gray-ribbed stockings, knitted by Mrs. Poyser's own hand, setting off the proportions of his leg. Mr. Poyser had no reason to be ashamed of his leg, and suspected that the growing abuse of top boots and other fashions tending to disguise the nether limbs had their origin in a pitiable degeneracy of the human calf. Still less had he reason to be ashamed of his round jolly face, which was good humor itself as he said, "Come, Eddie, come, little uns," and giving his arm to his wife, led the way through the causeway gate into the yard. The little uns addressed were Marty and Tommy, boys of 9 and 7, in little fustian-tailed coats and knee breeches, relieved by rosy cheeks and black eyes, looking as much like their father as a very small elephant is like a very large one. Eddie walked between them, and behind came patient Molly, whose task it was to carry Toddy through the yard, and over all the wet places on the road. For Toddy, having speedily recovered from her threatened fever, had insisted on going to church today, and especially on wearing her red and black necklace outside her tippet. And there were many wet places for her to be carried over this afternoon, for there had been heavy showers in the morning, though now the clouds had rolled off and lay in towering silvery masses on the horizon. You might have known it was Sunday if you had only waked up in the farmyard. The cocks and hens seemed to know it, and made only crooning subdued noises. The very bulldog looked less savage, as if he would have been satisfied with a smaller bite than usual. The sunshine seemed to call all things to rest, and not to labor. It was asleep itself on the moss-grown cowshed, on the group of white ducks nestling together with their bills tucked under their wings, on the old black sow stretched languidly on the straw, while her largest young one found an excellent spring bed on his mother's fat ribs, on the lick, the shepherd, in his new smock frock, taking an uneasy siesta, half sitting, half standing on the granary steps. Alick was of opinion that church, like other luxuries, was not to be indulged in often by a foreman who had the weather and the use on his mind. Church. Nay, and gotten some mat else to think on, was an answer which he often uttered in a tone of bitter significance that silenced further question. I feel sure Lick meant no, your reverence. Indeed, I know that his mind was not of a speculative negative cast, and he would on no account have missed going to church on Christmas Day, Easter Sunday, and his Suntide. But he had a general impression that public worship and religious ceremonies, like other non-productive employments, were intended for people who had leisure. "There's father a-standing at the yard gate," said Martin Poyser. I reckon he wants to watch us down the field. It's wonderful what sight he has, and him turned 75. Ah, I often think it's why TH old folks as it is why the babbies, said Mrs. Poyser. They're satisfied why looking, no matter what they're looking at. It's God Almighty's way o' quietening them, I reckon, afore they go to sleep. Old Martin opened the gate as he saw the family procession approaching, and held it wide open, leaning on his stick pleased to do this bit of work. For, like all old men whose life has been spent in labor, he liked to feel that he was still useful, that there was a better crop of onions in the garden, because he was by at the sowing, and that the cows would be milked the better if he stayed at home on a Sunday afternoon to look on. He always went to church on sacrament Sundays, but not very regularly at other times. On wet Sundays, or whenever he had a touch of rheumatism, he used to read the three first chapters of Genesis instead. They'll ha put and thias beat I the ground afore ye get to the churchyard, he said, as his son came up. T'ud ha been better luck if they'd ha buried him I the forenoon, when the rain was fallen. There's no likelihoods of a drop now, and the moon lies like a boat there, dost see? That's a sure sign o' fair weather there's a many as is false but that's sure. Aye, said the son, I'm in hopes it'll hold up now. Mind what the parson says, mind what the parson says, my lads, said grandfather to the black-eyed youngsters in knee breeches, conscious of a marble or two in their pockets which they looked forward to handling, a little, secretly, during the sermon. Goodbye, danded, said Toddy. E doin' to church. Me dot my necklace on. Dive me a peppermint. Granded, shaking with laughter at this eep little wench, slowly transferred his stick to his left hand, which held the gate open, and slowly thrust his finger into the waistcoat pocket on which Toddy had fixed her eyes with a confident look of expectation. And when they were all gone, the old man leaned on the gate again, watching them across the lane along the home close, and through the far gate, till they disappeared behind a bend in the hedge. For the hedgerows in those days shut out one's view, even on the better managed farms. And this afternoon, the dog roses were tossing out their pink wreaths, the nightshade was in its yellow and purple glory, the pale honeysuckle grew out of reach, peeping high up out of a holly bush, and over all an asher a sycamore every now, and then threw its shadow across the path. There were acquaintances at other gates who had to move aside, and let them pass. At the gate of the home close there was half the dairy of cows standing one behind the other, extremely slow to understand that their large bodies might be in the way. At the far gate there was the mare holding her head over the bars, and beside her the liver-colored foal with its head towards its mother's flank, apparently still much embarrassed by its own straddling existence. The way lay entirely through Mr. Poyser's own fields till they reached the main road leading to the village, and he turned a keen eye on the stock and the crops as they went along, while Mrs. Poyser was ready to supply a running commentary on them all. The woman who manages a dairy has a large share in making the rent, so she may well be allowed to have her opinion on stock, and therein an exercise which strengthens her understanding, so much that she finds herself able to give her husband advice on most other subjects. There's that Shorthorn Sally, she said, as they entered the home close, and she caught sight of the meek beast that lay chewing the cud and looking at her with a sleepy eye. Begin to hate the sight o' the cow, and I say now, what I said 3 weeks ago, the sooner we get rid of her the better, for there's that little yellow cow as doesn't give half the milk, and yet I've twice as much butter from her. Why, feet not like the women in general, said Mr. Poyser, they like the Shorthorns, as give such a lot o' milk. There's Chown's wife wants him to buy no other sort. What's it signify what Chown's wife likes? A poor soft thing, why no more headpiece nor a sparrow. She'd take a big colander, to strain her lard why, and then wonder as the scratchings run through. I've seen enough of her to know as I'll never take a servant from her house again all hugger mugger, and you'd never know, when you went in, whether it was Monday or Friday, the wash dragon on to th end o' the week. And as for her cheese, I know well enough it rose like a loaf in a tin last year. And then she talks o' the weather being I fault, as there's folks that stand on their heads, and then say the fault was I their boots. Well, John's been wanting to buy Sally, so we can get rid of her if he licks, said Mr. Poyser, secretly proud of his wife's superior power of putting two and two together. Indeed, on recent market days he had more than once boasted of her discernment in this very matter of shorethorns. He, the mass choose a soft for a wife may's well buy up the shorethorns, for if you get your head stuck in a bog, your legs may's well go after it. Eh? Talk o' legs, there's legs for you, Mrs. Poyser continued, as Toddy, who had been set down now the road was dry, toddled on in front of her father and mother. Here's shapes. And she's got such a long foot, she'll be her father's own child. Aye, she'll be welly such a one as Hetty I 10 years' time, on she's got thy colored eyes. I never remember a blue eye I my family, my mother had eyes as black as sloes, just like Hetty's. The child'll be none the worse for having some mad as isn't like Hetty, and I'm none for having her so over pretty. Though for the matter o' that, there's people why light hair and blue eyes as pretty as them why black. If Dinah had got a bit o' color in her cheeks, and didn't stick that Methodist cap on her head, enough to frighten the cows, folks would think her as pretty as Hetty. Nay, nay, said Mr. Poyser, with rather a contemptuous emphasis, thee dostna know the pints of a woman. The men would never run after Dinah as they would after Hetty. What care I what the men would run after? It's well seen what choice the most of them know how to make, by the poor draggle tails o' wives you see, like bits o' gauze ribbon, good for nothing when the color's gone. Well, well, thee canstna say, but what I knowed how to make a choice when I married thee, said Mr. Poyser, who usually settled little conjugal disputes by a compliment of this sort, and thee was twice as buxom as Dinah 10 year ago. I never said as a woman had need to be ugly to make a good missus of a house. There's John's wife ugly enough to turn the milk, and save the rennet, but she'll never save nothing any other way. But as for Dinah, poor child, she's never likely to be buxom, as long as she'll make her dinner o' cake and water, for the sake o' giving to them as want. She provoked me past bearing sometimes. And, as I told her, she went clean again the scripter, for that says, love your neighbor as yourself. But, apostrophe I said, if you loved your neighbor no better nor you do yourself, Dinah, it's little enough you do for him. You'd be thinking he might do well enough on a half-empty stomach. Apostrophe apostrophe A, I wonder where she is this blessed Sunday. Sitting by that sick woman, I dare say, as she'd set her heart on going to all of a sudden. Ah, it was a pity she should take such megrims into her head, when she might ha' stayed by us all summer, and eaten twice as much as she wanted, and it had never ha' been missed. She made no odds in TH house at all, for she sat as still at her sewing as a bird on the nest, and was uncommon nimble at running to fetch anything. If Hetty gets married, thee'dst like to ha' Dinah Wiley constant. It's no use thinking o' that, said Mrs. Poyser. Who might as well beckon to the flying swallow as ask Dinah to come, and live here comfortable, like other folks. If anything could turn her, I should ha' turned her, for I've talked to her for a hour on end, and scolded her too, for she's my own sister's child, and it behoves me to do what I can for her. But eh, poor thing, as soon as she'd said us goodbye, and got into the cart, and looked back at me with her pale face, as is welly like her Aunt Judith come back from heaven, I begun to be frightened to think o' the set downs I'd given her. For it comes over you sometimes, as if she'd a way o' knowing the right so things more nor other folks have. But I'll never give in as that's cause she's a Methodist, no more nor a white cap's white cause it eats out o' the same bucket why a black gun. Nay, said Mr. Poyser, with as near an approach to a snarl as his good nature would allow, I'm no opinion o' the Methodists. It's on traits folks as turn Methodists. You never knew a farmer bitten why the maggots. There's maybe a workman now and then, as isn't over clever its work, takes to preaching and that, like Seth Bead. But you see Adam, as has got one of the best headpieces hereabout, knows better. He's a good churchman, else I'd never encourage him for a sweetheart for Eddie. Why, goodness me, said Mrs. Poyser, who had looked back while her husband was speaking, look where Molly is with them lads. They're the field's length behind us. How could you let them do so, Eddie? Anybody might as well set a picture to watch the children as you. Run back and tell them to come on. Mr. and Mrs. Poyser were now at the end of the second field, so they set Toddie on the top of one of the large stones forming the true Loamshire style, and awaited the loiterers, Toddie observing with complacency, "Day naughty naughty boys me dude." The fact was that this Sunday walk through the fields was fraught with great excitement to Marty and Tommy, who saw a perpetual drama going on in the hedgerows, and could no more refrain from stopping and peeping than if they had been a couple of spaniels or terriers. Marty was quite sure he saw a yellow hammer on the boughs of the great ash, and while he was peeping, he missed the sight of a white-throated stoat, which had run across the path, and was described with much fervor by the junior Tommy. Then there was a little greenfinch, just fledged, fluttering along the ground, and it seemed quite possible to catch it, till it managed to flutter under the blackberry bush. Eddie could not be got to give any heed to these things, so Molly was called on for her ready sympathy, and peeped with open mouth wherever she was told, and said, "Ox," whenever she was expected to wonder. Molly hastened on with some alarm, when Eddie had come back and called to them that her aunt was angry, but Marty ran on first, shouting, "We found the speckled turkey's nest, Mother!" With the instinctive confidence that people who bring good news are never in fault. "Ah," said Mrs. Poyser, really forgetting all discipline in this pleasant surprise, "that's a good lad. Why, where is it?" "Down in ever such a hole, under the hedge. I saw it first, looking after the greenfinch, and she sat on th nest." "You didn't frighten her, I hope," said the mother, "else she'll forsake it." "No, I went away as still, and whispered to Molly, didn't I, Molly?" "Well, well, now come on," said Mrs. Poyser, "and walk before." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.